Welcome, everybody, to episode 9 of SNY.TV's Meet the Mets cast. Rob Render, Matt Cervone, Steve Hofstetter. A quick programming note, this show is available as part of the SNY.TV Mets podcast feed, so search SNY Mets in the iPhone podcast app or whatever app you use to listen to your podcasts, and definitely subscribe to the feed if you haven't already. Rate us and drop us a review. We are going to do our best, at least at the beginning of this show, to keep it as positive as we possibly can. I know so many times this Mets team has this innate ability of doing something positive and then just yanking your heart out one day later with an incredibly gut-wrenching loss. But we're not going to concentrate on those losses, at least not at the top of the show. As I said, we're going to try to keep this episode as positive as possible. Guys, the best way I can do that is by talking about the one player who has been unbelievable this season, and a guy who, at least at the beginning of the year, wasn't even expected to start. He was on the bench, to the point where now people are having to write his name in on all-star ballots because he's not actually on the ballot. He wasn't a starter at the beginning of the year, and that's Michael Conforto. So I'm going to ask you guys some questions, and I'd like some feedback from each one of you on Michael Conforto, who I think has been just a god on the baseball field to start the year. So, Matt, we'll start with you. With Conforto playing so well, we know that Yoenis Cespedes is about to come back. What in the world are the Mets going to do with their outfield configuration? There is no way Michael Conforto is going to the bench. What are they going to do? Who does go to the bench?
Well, I mean, it's obviously Granderson. The question is what's going on with Jay Bruce's back. And, you know, by the time people listen to this, there may be news on that, assuming that they are talking to the media about it today. And if, you know, it's funny, as soon as I saw that Bruce was out with the tightness in his back, my first thought was, all right, well, I wonder when he's having back surgery, like Walker did last year, because it just seems like that would be the obvious conclusion with even the smallest back pain. So we'll see what happens with Bruce, because that's going to dictate, you know, right? Like if Bruce is hurt, that's going to change things. You know, with Cespedes coming back and then, you know, Lagares playing pretty well, at least in center. So, I mean, Granderson's got to go to the bench. We've talked about it before. It's time. It's time.
Yeah, he was so terrible at the beginning of the year. And he has improved a little bit, speaking of Granderson. But I guess it really is time. Mm. And you've spent so much money on him. Steve, do you feel the same way that Granderson's the odd man out here?
I think he is the odd man out just because of the early season performance as well as his age. But, you know, failing the Mets transferring to the American League to have a designated hitter, I think this is probably the way that's going to happen.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, gotcha. All right. So, Steve, we'll go with this next. Conforto, again, he's been so good. He's been batting leadoff for the most part. I personally love him in the leadoff spot. I like that when you throw a guy up there right away who's an immediate threat to hit the ball out of the ballpark, which he's done several times as a leadoff hitter. But at the same time, because you're batting him leadoff, a lot of solo home runs out of him, and you don't get as much run production necessarily. So do you consider moving him back in the lineup, whether it be to the three-hole, even the four-hole potentially, maybe even the two-hole, because sometimes you want your best hitter batting second. At least you get a leadoff guy on in front of him. Do you consider moving him in the lineup, Steve?
I would consider it. I don't think that I guess I'll put it this way. The way that things are going forward with, you know, the sabermetrics and the stats and et cetera, I think we still haven't figured out what the best configuration of a lineup is, because it seems that everyone will agree to something and then something else will suddenly work. And then everybody will be like, oh, well, that's the answer then. And right. So it just depends on the talent on the individual team. I don't think there's right. a right answer.
I think I agree with you, because I think a long, long time ago, it used to be that your cleanup hitter was your best hitter, quote unquote.
Absolutely.
And then it became your three-hole hitter was your best hitter. You want the guy batting third. He's going to get maybe a few more at-bats over the course of a season, and that's where you're going to bat your
cleanup
best hitter.
And cleanup will protect him, and then you have the spray hitter number five, and like that was how we all arranged our lineups in, you know, RBI baseball and whatever else we played.
Exactly.
But like those days are completely gone now, and new analytics come out every day that seems to tell us that we're wrong. And I'm tired of trying to figure out whether or not eggs are good for cholesterol or bad for it. And let's just you know,
fair enough.
We don't know
Matt,
yet.
Matt, would you move?
I mean, Sure. I don't really think, as long as he's in the top three and he's getting the most at bats every game, like, that's fine by me. I think a lot of this stuff is overrated in terms of its impact, but I mean, as long as he is getting up as much as he can, that's really all that matters. He reminds me of like Ripken, Mattingly, that kind of hitter where like, I don't think it's going to matter so much where he's at. He hits, you know, he adjusts to the pitchers so well that I don't think batting him in different spots is going to change his approach. My concern is just that he would get into some different habits or some bad habits. And I mean, as long as he's hitting well, I mean, as long as he's in those top three spots, I think he's fine.
Right. One thing I love about Conforto, by the way, that I want to mention, guys, is he has forced his way into the lineup.
Yeah.
That, well, again, we're talking about a guy. Well, they obviously wanted to play him, but with the current configuration and what's on this roster, I don't blame them at the very start of the year for saying, hey, look, we have to have him as a fourth outfielder. We need to play Granderson. He's a veteran. We need to play Bruce. But once those guys either fade out, which some of them have, or you get an injury like Cespedes and Granderson has not played all that well and Bruce is now hurt. So one way or another, Conforto has put himself in a position where he's getting at bats and he has made every single one of them count. He is not only the best player on the team right now, but a guy who, again, is going to probably be an all-star should he get enough write-in votes. So I'm just so impressed with what he's done. Steve, before we move on from this topic, though, I got to ask you this. I didn't even know this. Conforto apparently lived with Noah Syndergaard. Who knew? You guys did. And now that no longer is the case, apparently. So do you think he's lonely now that he no longer lives with Syndergaard? It's not translating on the field.
I think he's handling it quite nicely. also, yes. By the way,
I'd say it seems to be working out for him.
I love the idea that, I love the idea that, you know, we're sitting here being like, hey, this guy who is hitting, you know, 50 to 70 points above expected, who's hitting way more home runs than expected, who's just killing it right now. Yeah, the on-base percentage is unreal. And, like, we're like, so should we move him in the order? Like, no, change nothing. It's the one thing that's working. Like, let's just shut up and be happy for a second. In terms of, like, not living with Syndergaard, I mean, maybe he's just has more time to concentrate on his hitting now that he's not just reloading Syndergaard Twitter to see all the comments. So it's, I think it's, maybe it gave him some free time.
Absolutely. So that's the most positive thing I think around the Mets right now is Michael Conforto on an individual basis, at least that he's just been unbelievable on the field. And I love watching him play. He's everything and more, I guess, than I thought he would be this year. So that's great. Some other positive stuff. It's not just Michael Conforto. Obviously, the Mets have won a few series here. Yes, they did have that long 7-game losing streak in between, but took 2 out of 3 against the Nationals, took 2 out of 3 against the Angels. I have a chance to take 2 out of 3 today against San Diego should they win the game tonight on Thursday. There's some other series there where they took 2 out of 3 against the Giants and so on and so forth. So they're winning a lot of series right now. They're also getting a little bit healthier. Travis d'Arnaud is already back, activated yesterday from the DL. He's already planning his next stint, so I'm sure they already have a flight in hand to Port St. Lucie for him. But for now, he's in New York with the team. Yoenis Cespedes is on his way back. Steven Matz and Seth Lugo are reportedly pretty close to coming back, maybe as soon as sometime early next week. We could see them rejoin the rotation. The Mets are also hitting the ball pretty well. 322 with runners in scoring position this year, which is a shock because in the past they've been so terrible in that category. They're tied for second in baseball in RBI in the month of May. So, Matt, I don't think it's the offense necessarily that's been struggling despite the injury to Cespedes. To me, it's all about the pitching, but the offense, let's just talk about the offense for a minute. That's been pretty good.
It has. The other thing is their batting average on balls in play is, you know, suggests that they're also hitting into a lot of bad luck, and yet the offense isn't the problem. So when they get these guys back and maybe some balls start dropping, I think you're going to, you know, the offense, like you said, is not going to be the issue. Like, that is where the turnaround will be possible. Where it'll happen is, the pitching. It really is the rotation, because that, you know, we've seen over the last few days, last week, that the rotation's inability to get beyond the fifth or sixth inning, their inability to stay healthy, is putting so much pressure and work on the bullpen that the whole dynamic is just collapsing, and when you have, and we'll get into Terry later, but when he's sort of making the calls, the whole thing is just, you know, it's just a mess. So the offense, you're right, the offense is fine, and I actually think they're underproducing in terms of what they're capable of, and especially, you know, you get, I mean, think about last year when they got Cespedes and Cabrera back at sort of the same time. They really caught fire. And so, like, you really, especially now with Conforto hitting the way he is, you could put that whole thing back together. That top of the order is going to be pretty lethal. But if they're letting up 7-8 runs a game, it's not really going to matter.
Yeah, and to go with that, Neil Walker hitting the ball extremely well in the month of May after a very quiet April. Jose Reyes hasn't been all that great, but he did pick up his 2,000th hit in May. Jay Bruce picked up his 250th home run. So, career home run, that is, of course. And so guys are starting to hit the ball a little bit better. And as you said, when they get Cespedes back, and then also, I think it's probably within maybe a month or two that we'll see Ahmed Rosario get a call up, more than likely anyway. So, and he's been raking in AAA. So, Steve, I think there's reason to believe that this offense can sustain throughout the entire year, that they're going to be pretty good.
Absolutely. I mean, there are players who have been underperforming. I mean, we talked about it in an early episode about the idea, you know, when Neil Walker was hitting like 150 and it was clear, I was like, look, it's not going to, you know, it's not going to go that way forever. A number of these guys are hitting not even as well as they're capable of, and they're still doing well. And, you know, we just have to figure out, you know, how to score 8-9 runs a game so that we can,
right.
Yeah,
it's doable.
Counteract
sure.
At 7. Yeah. I want to bring this up though, because people, you know, are dooming and glooming and all that stuff. And I was looking at the MLB power rankings that just came out, you know, Tim Brown for Yahoo Sports.
Yep.
And the Mets were super low. And I was like, what's going on here? Why does he have the Mets down at number 25? That seems a little bit ridiculous. And his reasoning was, seriously, Harvey's only going to get a few more chances. But, like, I was like, wait a second. I thought Harvey had kind of picked things up, and I was looking at it. Harvey's had 3 bad games this season. 3.
Yeah, right.
Well,
I mean, right, bad starts. But, I mean, he's struggled, and, you know, he's labored through them. I think that's the thing.
Well, yeah, but my point is that, like, it just seems a little bit odd that, like, in his last start, 2 runs in 5 innings. The one before that, 3 in 5.1. That's not fantastic, but it's still not bad. And the idea that, like,
with what you're saying though, Steve, is that 5 innings,
yeah.
5 innings, 5 innings. You know that, and that is
agreed.
The big issue, is that it labors that bullpen, it taxes the bullpen. It's a big problem that they're just not getting any depth from the start. But I agree with you that on the positive end, that Matt Harvey is a guy who's at least showing some signs that there's some life in his arm. I think that's the biggest thing for me is you want something from Harvey, not just this year, but also next year before he becomes a free agent. And if you're going to get that, at least you know now that he can still throw 97 occasionally, that he just kind of loses his stuff a little bit, that he loses maybe the windup, it seems like, is a little bit out of whack. And if you listen to Ron Darling, he talks about some mechanical issues. You know, he's leaning back this much or he's leaning forward. So once he gets the mechanics all in order again, It's been so long since he pitched, but I agree with you that there's some positives there. Also, I should bring this up. Jacob deGrom in the rotation isn't getting a lot of notoriety right now, but he's been very good. Second in the National League in strikeouts. He has 76, only a couple behind Zach Greinke. So deGrom has been excellent. I think at least there are some pieces that have been good in the pitching staff. It, as a whole, they haven't been all that great. But Matt, I think Jacob deGrom has been one of those surprises this year.
Yeah,
he's been very good.
Yeah, he's been terrific, just holding down the fort, you know, and like it hasn't been easy for him either, you know, as you can see, like he's, you know, his starts have been a bit of a grind as well. But he, you know, last year he did such a tremendous job, I think, of pitching through and learning a little bit. You kind of saw him mature as a pitcher last year in a way that he always was good at sort of commanding innings and stuff. But last year he really seemed to get more crafty. And like you see him bringing that into the mix this year because his mechanics are off too. He's doing a lot of things that, you know, are sort of, I think, giving him a difficult time trying to command on the edges and stuff. But you know, unlike Harvey, I think Jake, you sort of see him adjust, you know, what's working, what's not. And he kind of fights his way through those starts, which I love watching as a fan of pitching. Like, it's always good to kind of watch that. And I wish Harvey would get there. The guy that really hurts missing, it's so funny. Like, we don't talk about him, but Seth Lugo would be, hugely valuable right now because he could piggyback on some of these starts with Harvey. You know, he'd be in there throwing 2-3 innings at a clip to kind of space out the bullpen. And as much as Matt's hurts to have him out in Syndergaard, obviously, but like Lugo was sort of that in between guy, that relief ace that I think they were looking for. And missing him, yeah, I think, is really hurting.
I agree with you completely. And, you know, one point that I want to bring up before we move on is that I was a little disappointed during the offseason that the Mets didn't add a little bit more depth, that the organization kind of knew going into the year you had so many guys coming back from surgery. And, yeah, maybe it's hard to add an established starting pitcher when he's not going to be a starter for you. Like, how do you – people are saying, well, why didn't the Mets go after Doug Fister? How do you convince Doug Fister to sign with you when you can't guarantee him 30 starts if he's healthy?
Because,
you
know, right,
wait, Doug but, Fister, Rob, hold on a second. Come on. Let's rewind a moment and, like – we had 8 healthy starting pitchers as far as we knew, 8 of them. Like, there wasn't a moment in, and not only that, but you had 4 of them, what we considered top tier, with Wheeler coming back, hoping that he would be the Wheeler that we knew. And so, which he, you know, kind of is again. And so the idea that we needed more starting depth, I disagree with that one. I don't think we, at the time, it would have been very, very difficult for any of us to really say that. And if you did say that, I would like to see it in print because I don't.
Well, any GM will tell you they, you know, you want to have 7 to 8 pitchers that you can sort of count on, right? And that's what they had. You know, Lugo and Gazelman were the depth. So like, it's not, this was the worst case scenario. Like, this is when, exactly what Steve is saying, like when you're laying all this out in the winter, you're thinking, all right, well, I mean, you know, yeah, of course we could suffer a whole bunch of injuries and be short pitchers, but I mean, what are the chances of that? Well, apparently they were pretty good because that's exactly what happened, but that's the last thing you think is going to happen. Like, I think it's almost impossible. And Rob, this is sort of what you were alluding to prepare against that. Like, that's what your farm system's for. Doug, you know, these other guys, these journeyman veterans, they're not signing knowing that they're the 9th guy in the totem pole.
Right.
Because there's no shot. Right. You know, so like, they were just caught in a really bad spot. I mean, guys got hurt. It's not what you expected.
All right.
We did get a chance to all see the wonderful Tommy Malone, though. I mean, we only got to see him for like an inning, but like,
that was amazing.
Way to go out, you know? I mean, you're talking Justin Ruggiano a couple weeks or last week, and it's like, it's the same thing. Like, this kid finally gets his crack with the Mets. They bring him in, he gets hurt, boom. Like, it's the perfect fit for him, for this team to go out with an injury. It's just, what are you going to do?
I had so much fun, by the way. I had so much fun on the Mets subreddit, like, just pretending I was still excited about Tommy Malone, like, during that start. Jeez. I would just be like, guys, he's going to settle down. Like, you look at his mechanics. I know it looks like he's throwing BP, but like, I really think he's going to get there. It was a whole lot of fun.
All right, we're trying to stay positive. Okay, so let's keep the positive thing going. Yes, yeah.
I'm positive about how much fun it was.
So there you go. The Riveras. The Riveras have been surprisingly decent. Right. Neither has been amazing. But TJ and Renee, and to me, there's no shock here. Renee is the bigger surprise of the two Riveras. I am pleasantly shocked with how good Renee Rivera's been. Behind the plate, we kind of knew that he was solid, right? That he has a good arm, catches the staff well. Heck, he had become the number one catcher for Noah Syndergaard, right? Syndergaard will only throw to him, which I don't blame him when you see the other catchers on the roster. But hitting the baseball, 287, couple home runs, 14 runs batted in, 87 at bats. I'm more surprised with what they've gotten out of Renee than TJ, though TJ has been his normal kind of steady, consistent self. Steve, you feel the same way? Renee, the bigger surprise, or you think TJ with his 258 average?
I think Renee is the bigger surprise. You know, TJ, because he just couldn't not hit the ball last year. Like, that was a very weird thing when, like TJ Rivera would come up and we would all just be like, it's going to be a single. Like, you know, we weren't expecting more than that. But he just seemed to never get out in a crucial situation, and that was awesome. So in a way, it's almost like a little bit of a disappointment. But I think Renee Rivera, the Mets have to choose between two catchers that are doing okay. You know, like, that's always the toughest when you've got two guys that are B pluses right now. Is it's not just hard to choose between them, but just the idea of like, how do you upgrade a B plus? Like, that's a tough thing to do. So I think Rene Rivera, I keep saying Rivera as if there aren't two. Rene Rivera, I think, is the more pleasant surprise because I did not expect this from him.
Now here's the problem. The guys they're catching have been complete garbage. I mean, that's the real problem. That's the honest truth, is that Rene Rivera has been great, but the guys on the mound have been awful.
By the way, my favorite statistic was, so when Tommy Malone goes in and, you know, gives up, what, 7 earned runs in 1.1 innings, and then Montero comes in to relieve him, but he only gave up, I think, like 1 in 3. He lowered his ERA significantly, and he still had a higher ERA than Malone at the end of that game, which was
I said this on Sunday. How do you treat your fans on a Sunday to Tommy Malone back-to-back with Rafael Montero? And by the way, how is Rafael Montero still even in the big leagues?
I have no idea. Matt, help me here.
What could they have done? Because I'm looking at the minor leagues, and you see what I see in AAA. It's a pile of whatever in AAA as well. So I don't know how you improve this. That's the problem. They're stuck in this position where the bullpen is horrific. You're not getting Familia back anytime soon. I don't know how you fill those spots other than what you said earlier with Lugo coming back. Maybe he slots in.
Yeah, this whole just to go back to the Rivera thing, like, keep in mind, I mean, I like Rene Rivera as a backup catcher and everything, but like, he had four or five, six games where he was just on fire. I think he had like 500. He's been a 200 hitter like the first 15 games prior to that, and like the 10 games since. It was just those six games that he went nuts. And a similar thing with TJ Rivera too. So like, you know, I get it, but you know, it's still, he's not the ideal starting catcher. I think it's just white knuckle it. I think that's all this is. There's nothing they can do about anything with the pitching staff at this point. They're caught between a rock and a hard place. You can't make trades. There's nothing in the farm system to bring up necessarily. I mean, maybe, Tyler Pill, Adam Rubin wrote the other day on Mets Blog but like, come on. Right, exactly. So it's just hold on to the wheel and hope that the car doesn't go off the cliff until these guys start coming back. You know, Mats may come back next week. Lugo shouldn't be far behind. You know, once that starts to happen and they have options, then you could start to make some moves. But right now, you're just hoping that they don't completely fall apart to make those moves irrelevant, that you stay in it, and then they're there. Then you could start, you know, start doing it. But right now, I think you just got to hold your breath and, I don't know, hope they get through.
Yeah, I guess. I tweet this every single day. Every day when they go to the bullpen, that no lead is safe. No lead is safe. That you have to hide your children because it's going to be ugly as can be. And Steve, look, everyone wants to get on Terry Collins. And I think it's fair, especially last night, my goodness, on Wednesday, what he did with bullpen management was not the greatest. And he's not the greatest at that anyway. That's not his strong suit. It never has been. But look, there's so many different angles to look at here. What they have in the bullpen is awful. So he doesn't have great options. Has he burned those bad options at times? Absolutely, he has. I think it's a little unfair, though, to jump all on Terry. At some point, your players have to perform. But at the same time, your manager also has to put them in the best position to perform. And I don't think Terry does a very good job of that always. So I don't know if I should be angry, Steve, at Terry, or if I should just say, look, I'm going to give him a break here because, again, who's he going to go to? Who does he call on? What do you think?
Plawecki, I think. I actually think that Rafael Montero would make a better backup catcher than he would a pitcher. So maybe we should trade with ourselves and have Plawecki get sent to the bullpen and Montero catch. Yeah, I think one of the big problems is that the thing that I will put on Terry is overuse of certain guys. And because no matter how good you are, you cannot perform when your arm is jelly. And it's, you know, it's as simple as that. There are times when we're down by 7 runs, like, let Montero pitch 9, you know, let him throw the whole game. It doesn't matter. We're already done. Stop using up our guys who could actually hold leads. And that is the main thing that I would agree with. We need a guy to eat innings when it doesn't matter at all.
That guy doesn't, you know, it's funny. They don't really, no team really carries that. Like, that was such a big, like, 80s, 90s thing. The mop-up guy. Like, that's all they did, you know? Like, and it's so specialized now. You don't really see a lot of that. And you're right. Like, if that's all Montero does, it actually serves a purpose because it keeps everybody else, you know, rested. And like, you look at these past few games, like Terry used his most effective relievers in that game when they were up 5 runs. Now, on one hand, it's easy to criticize that and get all over it. At the same time, there's a very good chance that had he not gone to those guys, they would have coughed up that 5-run lead anyway. So, yeah. Like, you know, and then where is he? It's like, oh, how come he didn't bring in, you know, Sewall and, Jerry Blevins? Like, why were you sitting on him? You know, well, we had a 5-run lead. Well, you know, like, it's either he's damned if he does, damned if he doesn't. Like, these guys are burned out.
Maybe,
like
Steve maybe said. Wait.
So I don't know what the answer is.
Maybe wait on those guys until it's a 3-run lead.
Yeah, sure. You know, sure. But, you know what I'm saying? It's like, this is one of these things where, like, you're pulling at strings. And I don't think there's a perfect outcome by any means. You know, there's sort of right and wrong in terms of theory, but I think in practice this is all over the road.
You know where we are right now? Where we are right now in the Mets movie, and I'm not just saying this because Harvey's supposed to be Batman, but where we are in the Mets movie is the part where, like, Batman thinks he shouldn't really come back and fight, or, you know, like Superman goes away or whatever it is. And like, it's just the local cops and maybe a couple of individual like citizens are like trying to hold off the supervillains. Yeah. And eventually the heroes come back. And that's what I'm hoping for in terms of the drama of the season. But I'll tell you what, sports at its very core is entertainment. And my God, has this season been entertaining.
I'm exhausted. I mean, really, I'm tired. Like, the funny thing is,
it's May.
I know it's May. And this has happened the last 2 years. Like, each of the last 2 seasons, we went through this exact same narrative, basically. Like, I find myself writing almost the exact posts from around the same time of year because I went back and looked in the archives of Xbox. It's almost word for word. It's amazing.
I just share your posts from last year and put my name on them.
Yeah.
Outstanding. If you think you're tired, Matt, imagine what the doctors and nurses at the Hospital for Special Surgery must be going through right now. I mean, it's like never ending. If they're on call for the Mets, oh my goodness, never ending. I do, again, to close this out, I don't put it all on Terry Collins. I don't think that's fair to do. I know fans love to do that, especially on Twitter. It's not fair, folks. Sorry. You know, you want to blame Terry for being bad at one thing, you have to also give him some positive and some encouragement and some positive reviews for being good at others. Every single manager around baseball makes a call that doesn't work out pretty regularly. And you can get on those guys. I mean, their fans get on them just as much. But, you know, ultimately, it's not really about the manager. Players have to go out there and perform. And the roster has to be set up correctly.
Can I just point out, though, something that we didn't even realize on this one is that this is the first time our roster is back together in a while.
Yeah, that's true. You're right.
So, I mean, we all go through
coming together.
That's right.
No, look, you know, we all go through that. We were each on the DL briefly. So it's nice to have the whole team back together. And, you know, let's see if we can make a run at this thing before the trade deadline. Otherwise, one of us is getting shipped off.
Yes, and you keep going on the road, so that's the big one.
Are we gonna be sellers or buyers? That's the question.
There you go.
That's right. Nice. All right, folks. Once again, you can find us on the SNY.TV Mets podcast feed. Search for SNY Mets in the iPhone podcast app or whatever app you use to listen to your podcasts. Steve, shows this week. Where are you?
I'm in the greater LA area, but then I hit Denver, Seattle, Portland, and a bunch of Canada stuff too.
Canada.
I'm going back to New York next weekend for my high school reunion, predominantly for the material.
Oh, so you'll be performing well done. At the high school reunion. Yes. Well done is right. Yeah. Matt, anything cool coming up on the other podcast?
No, not really. I mean, just Friday will be the Feedback Friday, taking voicemails and doing that thing and just doing a lot of promotional book publicity stuff for my Mets book, which I'm allowed to plug on air. So if people want to get it, it's MatthewStrone.com/Mets book. So please check it out. And that's really it.
Outstanding. All right, guys. It was a lot of fun. We will do it again next week. Thanks to Jason back in the studio, everybody over you guys are in Lower Manhattan now, right? They moved the whole studio from Midtown to Lower Manhattan. I haven't been to the new one yet. We do the show from all over the place. So one day I'll get to check it out. But thanks to everybody back in the studio, and we'll see everybody next week.